roadside cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Sing it. Song, song of the South. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5, 34 minutes after the hour on this Thursday morning. Text line, if you feel so inclined to respond, 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program, and we'll do our best to get all your texts in. Sometimes we run out of time, but generally speaking, we get everything in, and sometimes stuff that's not meant for air, but such as it is. Joining us now on the line, he is formerly our Secretary of State, but John Merrill joins us on the line. Secretary, good morning. How you been?
Jeff, doing great, and you're so kind to invite me to come and join you this morning for a few minutes. Hope everything's going well with you, my friend.
Everything is going well. No complaints here. Just like I said, it's a busy time with the politics of well, it's the nature of the job, but can't complain about that. What you been up to here lately?
Oh, just working for our firm, Wagner Engineering, and trying to identify new clients and help existing clients and watch our state grow economically and educationally and socially, and just doing what we can to be supportive of that. Of course, in our firm's area, primarily concentrating in water and sewer, roads and bridges, park design and development, long-range planning, those things that we do so very well, and working all over the state, many different projects. Just got back from Washington, meeting with some of our federal officials, members of Congress, and United States senators, talking to them about how they can be helpful in these municipalities. And not that we're working in all 465 municipalities, even though we'd love to. And same thing with all 67 counties, but just doing what we can every day, my friend.
Well, as I mentioned, the election cycle is, I guess, kind of now getting underway. You've been out and about talking about it a little bit. No surprise, Tommy Tuberville would clear the deck on the gubernatorial side. But what do you make of everything else kind of that's happened in the wake of that?
Well, and there has been a wake, as you mentioned, and seeing Coach make his intentions clear, and that is pretty obvious that he's going to be the governor of Alabama. I think he's got the potential to be one of, if not the best governor in the history of the state. I think one of the things that he's going to do is he's going to select good people, quality people, capable people to serve in his cabinet and in his administration at all levels. And I think that's going to be a benefit to the entire state of Alabama. Of course, with his announcement, that opens up the U.S. Senate seat. And of course, General Marshall's made his intentions known that he is going to be a candidate, and he's going to be a very strong candidate. He has national ties all across the country with other attorney generals, as well as his leadership with the Attorney General's Association. And that opened some doors for him financially, for him to be able to raise some federal money that others would not have access to just because of his contacts. And I think that he'll be very, very formidable in that Senate race. Also, of course, he was termed out of the AG's race, and looks like that race is going to be very competitive with obviously Pam Casey coming out of Blount County, and then Katherine Robertson. She'd already been campaigning, but making her intentions publicly known about wanting to fill her boss's seat as his chief deputy. And then, of course, Justice Mitchell resigning his seat. You know, he's committed. When you resign your seat to run, you're committed. And, of course, I know you saw his first disclosure, and he had a lot of money in the bank, and I think that he's going to be very, very formidable. And so will the other two individuals that have announced their intentions, and there may be somebody else out there, but that's where it is today.
Well, it's kind of interesting. You know, there's a lot on the ballot in 26. This is going to be an expensive cycle. I mean, even without a contested gubernatorial race, you know, Senate races, number one, are just by nature costly because you have all the Washington money. And you had the potential, if Barry Moore gets in the Senate mix, for another congressional race.
sure.
And who knows? Would somebody step aside in the interim? I don't know that to be the case, but you hear the rumors that I hear. But this could be a very costly cycle. Does it seem like that's going to make it a little harder for these candidates to fundraise?
I think it'll make it more difficult for some of those candidates to fundraise, those that don't have a natural base to pull from, those that have not distinguished themselves as successful candidates in the past, either because of being first-time candidates or not having a natural constituency. I think at that point, it may make it difficult for some of them to raise money. I think one of the things that you'll find Montgomery and Washington people doing is having the races actually mature to the point where they feel more confident in making contributions and donations to certain candidates in certain fields based on what they believe will happen, but watching a natural organic growth occur of both support and financial stability. So they'll know that they're not throwing good money after bad as they try to pick a horse.
Well, you've run in these kinds of cycles, and you know, as Secretary of State is mid-tier, I would think. It's not down bottom of the ballot, but it's not at the top either. And that's something,
right.
Something I've always kind of wondered, like guys who run down ballot, and you have these marquee races where all the drama and intrigue is, but you got to like campaign in that under those circumstances. Like, what would you tell somebody engaging in a down ballot election when there's so much attention dedicated at the top?
Well, the main thing that you have to do when it comes to campaigning is just be everywhere you can possibly be, meeting as many people as you can possibly meet, talking to all the leaders of the counties and the municipalities, the communities that you can get to, as well as interacting with all those active party officials who are going to be engaged and who are going to be encouraging people to follow the candidate that they support. And then as far as fundraising is concerned, you got to start with your family and friends and those people that believe in you and that they know you and that they want to be supportive of you and your campaign. In doing that, I think it opens some doors for some people, and others makes it more difficult. Also, those individuals who have the ability to self-fund really find themselves in a unique situation because they're able to move forward where others may be stalled out.
Well, something, and I talked to these candidates, I mean, as you do, I'm sure, as well. But what's always kind of been, you know, there's
hey,
such.
Jeff?
Yeah. Have you got me?
Hello.
Have you got me there?
Can you hear me?
I hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. I couldn't hear you.
I don't know. I got to get the bugs worked out here. Hey,
all right.
Tell me this, though. Talking to these candidates, and I'm sure you do too, they some of them put an emphasis on trying to get up on air, be it a lot of it's TV. Now,
sure.
And I know there's value in that. But the thing that's interesting, it's like a lot of these, you know, marquee races, they kind of flood the zone, and they you know, there's ads everywhere. And then say it's a campaign, you know, even AG and on down, I would say probably, or lieutenant governor or whatever. But getting up on air, yeah, fine. But it seems like you're not going to be able to be up there consistently. You're going to get drowned out. Is it kind of like a fool's gold phenomenon, you know, raising enough money in a very expensive advertising environment to get up on air?
Jeff, look, I think the key is making sure that what resources you have, you spend wisely. And a lot of times it's difficult for people to know when and how to do that. And that's why it's so very important to make sure you've got good quality advisors that are letting you know what their thoughts are based on past performance and participation. So they're not going to find themselves in a position where they are actually spending money they don't need to spend at a particular time. And when they can spend that money wisely, usually when you get somewhere about 6 weeks out, a month out, going into the election day, which will be May the 19th, 2026 for the Republican primary and the Democratic primary, then I think that they see more positive results from that investment. if they try to spend money early for different reasons, it can be a problem. Unfortunately, some people look at an aberration like occurred with Governor Bentley back in 2010, who went up on the air approximately 10 weeks before the election occurred. And he did that for name recognition and trying to build name recognition and support, and was successful in doing so because he bumped up about 6 points in the polls, which made him a player, which ultimately led to his position in the runoff. But if you don't have the resources to do that, it can be fool's gold and end up costing you the election because you ran out of money too early.
Talk about the media markets in Alabama. Well, what I've seen, and this is probably one of to the chagrin of like a lot of our listening audience here in this area, in this part of the state, such an emphasis in statewide campaigns is put on the Birmingham market. Almost with some campaigns, it's been exclusively Birmingham, and they have finite resources. I get it. I'm sure they would love to be on in Dothan, Mobile, Montgomery, Huntsville, and in Birmingham, and maybe even in the outlying like Mississippi counties or whatever, if they even could do that as well. But their strategy, their consultants will tell them you go big in Birmingham, and everything else will take care of itself. I mean, what's your philosophy on that?
Well, you know, one of the mediums you didn't even mention is local newspapers and community newspapers, and of course, now community websites that people use. And I think when you're able to do that effectively, I don't think it's a situation where you can have a one size fits all, Jeff. I think you have to have your plan for your campaign, and then you have to make sure that you follow your plan. It's just like winning a football game. I mean, you've got to have a plan going into it, but you also have got to make sure that you follow your plan, but that you have the ability to change your plan based on the situation. Because if you're not able to be flexible, then that can also result in some unfortunate results as well.
We're joined by former Secretary of State John Merrill here on the program. Secretary, what about you? Are you still in the mix for a potential run for office this cycle?
Well, you're kind to ask. We get encouragement every day. Lord have mercy. I have been to 12 counties this week doing my work, and everywhere I go, somebody asked me, well, what are you going to run for? Tell us what you're running for. We want to help you. We want to vote for you. We want to write you a check. And that means so much to me, Jeff, as people continue to show their support and their encouragement. But we have not made any decisions yet. I mean, obviously, one of the decisions that we have made, which is very clear to anybody that would be paying attention, you know, I will not be a candidate for governor. Coach Tuberville has my full support for that position. I think, as I mentioned to you earlier, he's going to have the potential to be one of the greatest governors in the history of the state. We are still looking at the United States Senate race as something that we need to evaluate where we are. We've got some things that we're doing to determine whether or not we feel like we can be a candidate for that position. In the lieutenant governor's race, one of the things that we're looking at is a response from the Ethics Commission on our ability to perform in that office, but also to be able to move forward with my career at Wagner Engineering and to continue to serve our company as Director of Public Policy and Strategic Markets. And certainly those considerations are very, very important. And then also to look at, you know, what are some of the other things that might be out there. But as you know, and I've mentioned this before, there's only four offices that I would ever run for if I run four offices again, and that would be governor, lieutenant governor, the United States Senate, and the United States Congress. And there's not a congressional seat that I'm interested in looking at today, so there's not really a need to even discuss that. But I do think that it's worth mentioning that I've seen three polls that have been done for the lieutenant governor's race that have credibility, that have been paid for by people that pay for them to make sure they know who the candidates are and what the realistic chances of those people being elected happens to be. And in all three of those, I was the lead guy that was mentioned in each one of those, and I didn't have anything to do with them. Didn't even know my name was going to be mentioned there. But that's flattering to see that happen. But no, we've not made a decision yet, but every day we get closer to making a final decision.
Well, and then let's talk about real quick before we wrap it up, the lieutenant governor's race. The polling I've seen, it's dated, obviously, but Twinkle Cavanaugh, you and Wes Allen, your successor in the Secretary of State's office, and you know, he's running. He at the time was running third. I think he's right now the front runner, though, of announced candidates. But the lieutenant governor,
that would be true because he's the only one of the three. You know, he was third in the polls that I saw. I think he was at least third in all of those. He was not in one or two in any of those polls. Obviously, I've already mentioned that. But he was third. I don't think he was lower than fourth in another one. But he is the only announced candidate that is currently in that race of those people that were mentioned.
But the departure of Twinkle Cavanaugh for the Trump administration, I mean, the pathway would look pretty good. And I don't know what kind of, you know, what changes with a Rick Payne in that race, but, you know.
Well, look, I think that Rick is a formidable candidate for most any office he'd be interested in. He's well-liked. He's very affable. People enjoy being around him. They're encouraged by his performance as our agriculture commissioner for the last 8 years or 7 years plus at this particular time. I think that he greets people well. He loves to travel the state. I think that he would be a candidate that needs to be watched. And I've actually seen a couple of special interest groups in the state that have already come out and publicly endorsed his candidacy for lieutenant governor. That's always a challenge because you don't always know what the field's going to be, but people have already endorsed him. So I think that Rick's entry into the race formally is going to also be one that's worth watching.
Well, we got to leave it there. One of these days we'll do the definitive segment on the Alabama machine and your experiences in student government at the university, but that'll have to wait for another day. Secretary, we always appreciate your time. Let's do it again soon.
Appreciate you, Jeff.
All right, John Merrill, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Just to send it on down the line. Hello, West Virginia coal miner. Let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living. Just to send it on down the line. This is for the one who drives the big rig.